Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Michael and Patty Show. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
Yes, you are. Welcome to the show, Patty. Today, we're discussing Prince Edward Island real estate and everything PEI. If you're new to the podcast, we cover those subjects, all kinds of other interesting stuff coming from two agents that have been doing real estate in the province for over 40 years. So today, we have a number of topics we're going to cover, and we're going to try to cover them lickety-split, but not miss any details. Patty, how are you today?
I am very well. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. So we did have the life in the, what was it, a week in the life of a real estate agent. We had to discontinue that after one or two episodes because each episode would have been 14 hours long. It's a crazy time of the year, and real estate, like many businesses, is cyclic. And I was joking with Patty just the other day there. I said to her, if you were to take the entire year off and just work July and August, you'd probably be a pretty successful real estate agent, PEI.
Yeah, those are typically our busiest sale months. Contract, properties going under contract and that for sure.
Listings and everything else, because we also saw the stats, which we covered in the last podcast, flip the table on just about all the numbers. Because it's July and August, so everyone's listing, everybody's selling, looking for homes, contacting us from out of province. And of course, that also leads into a delay when agents are trying to get back to you because they're not sitting around with nothing to do if they are a producer of any type.
Yeah, and when people come to the island during the summer, they typically, if they are having a good vacation, they fall in love, and then this becomes their... That's where I want to go every summer vacation spot. So we find a lot of people fall in love with PEI during vacation time, and they'll pick up a piece of land or a little cottage property too, which increases our property sales.
Which brings us to our first topic. I find, and I don't know about you, if someone comes here and they're on vacation for a couple of weeks and their plane leaves at 4 o'clock on Friday, they'll call us 2 o'clock on Friday to go through a house they saw while they're traversing the island.
Yes, that's happened many, many times over the course of many, many years.
Many, many, many?
Yes.
How many is in many?
A lot.
Oh, is that bigger than a whack?
I would say if you're looking for numbers, it would happen... For myself and my independent business, and again, there's over 500 realtors on PEI, probably at least once or twice a week, I will get a sense of urgency showing because they're leaving the island this evening, their plane leaves first thing in the morning, and they've got to get in tonight, and well, we need 24 hours notice. Well, if not, they're not going to look at it.
So what we have on the MLS cut sheets, when I enter a listing as a new listing, one of the fields in there is showing instructions. And many of these listings have very explicit showing instructions that will say 24 hours notice, 48 hours notice. In the summertime, what you're up against is many of these waterfront properties are daily and weekly rentals. And this is what I ran into with the last inquiry yesterday, where they wanted to get in right away. There is no other time they could go in, but the earliest they can go in this particular property is probably about a week from now because it's rented out for two continuous weeks. And the renters don't want showing. As a buyer's agent, read the showing instructions, which this agent didn't.
Yeah.
Texted him back and told him to read the showing instructions, and he ghosted me and never said anything else.
Yeah, and
just... he's young, and that's what they do. Don't you find that?
Sometimes I find...
Do you find young people just ghost you?
I'm not going to say young people. I find, yeah, they'll...
Younger. I mean, we're young, but I mean, in their 20s.
Okay, well, what I wanted to say is if there is a buyer listening to this episode, the showing instructions are not visible to the public, but it is on our backside system where we're able to see, you know, what is the accessibility? What is the time period? If it is tenant occupied, just be aware that it will probably require 48 hours notice. Why there's 48 hours if there's tenants and not a weekly rental like Michael, you were just referring to, but a regular long-term tenant is because it can take the property manager or seller 24 hours to get in touch with the tenant. And by the time they get in touch with the tenant, they need to give the tenant at least 24 hours.
So read the showing instructions if you're a listing agent and convey that information to the purchaser. And if you're vacationing here, start seeing properties in the beginning of your vacation, not 2 hours before the plane leaves.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say, if you are a seller, there is a service that I know
Let's just say it. Patty introduced this service to the island, and then somebody in the association took credit for it. Patty introduced showing time to PEI, which is from the States, which was a result of one of her coaches. Isn't that true?
Yes, I had.
It's out there. Everybody knows.
Yes. And okay. Well, that's so showing time is an excellent service. And what it does is it provides real time showing requests. So if you're a buyer and you've asked your buyer's agent to put in a request to view a property, if you're waiting until your buyer's agent gets in touch with the listing agent and then the listing agent gets in touch with the seller, that can sometimes take a little bit of time. I mean, if you're at a listing appointment, it could take 4 hours before you even get that showing request to put forth. However, if you're a listing agent, because it is available to all agents on PEI now, it is part of our system, puts in a request through showing time in real time, that seller gets notified of it. So if you are a seller listed with a realtor on PEI and you don't have showing time, you might want to ask them if you could request that service. Sometimes they'll say that they don't like it. It lacks being personable. Sometimes it's just a matter of not being able to educate themselves because there is a learning curve to using it.
In closing, with showing time, it will give the vendor a real-time feedback as far as what the property, how it showed, and if it's overpriced or underpriced or whatever.
Good point.
Moving along, have you ever had those clients that really like a piece of property? We're going to talk about land in this case. And they just absolutely love this property. They want to write an offer. They don't want anyone else to scoop them on this property. The emotions are running high. It's the only property in the whole world they want to buy right now. And you're asking them, well, do you want a building permit? Do you want a perk test? Do you want a survey? Do you want all this stuff done to make sure that when you end up with this property, you can actually build on it? And then they say, what? No, right?
Yeah, they'll say, no, that's okay. There's other development in the area. I'm not worried about it.
This is what becomes an issue, and it became an issue with me last week again. We're very well protected legally. But you've got a purchaser that wanted to purchase a property that waived all the conditions. Thankfully, I refused to represent them because I sort of saw this coming down the road. But what happened is in the contract, it didn't indicate that the purchaser or purchasers are waiving these conditions like building permit, perk test, whatever, against the advice of the agent. So it's important if you're representing a purchaser, and it's important if you are a purchaser to understand that the listing agent's probably going to put in a disclaimer or should, so they're not held liable down the road because they're always going to play the victim and say, oh, no, the agent never, I didn't understand. I can't read English. I'm new to this country, you know?
Yeah, or that the whole clause was redacted. I didn't realize what was underneath all of that.
Yeah, they redact the clause with the big white box and you don't even know what's there. So disclaimers are really important for purchasers' agents, and they're also important for the purchaser to understand. You're waiving a condition that could be super valuable. They were actually going to jump down to point number 6 here on our list. Pre-approved building lots. Are they pre-approved, Patty, or aren't they?
Pre-approved as in they've been severed off in an approved piece of land.
If someone took 5 acres, divided it into 5 1-acre lots, they were perk tested back in 1970, they're pinned, you know, the big stamp from the government with a happy face.
No. They are not. That does not mean they are approved today. Even if a seller says, well, they've been grandfathered in, that is still not a guarantee.
What I would suggest if you are buying a building lot in PEI, and you can correct me if you have a different opinion or I'm wrong, is have your lawyer obtain a building permit or at least do the necessary inquiries to satisfy things on the purchaser's side to make sure that, in fact, you can build on that lot. Because there's all kinds of things going on right now. I know one agent last week told me that she or he, to keep them ambiguous, said that she had sold a number of lots in the subdivision. Their friends bought them. They're all thrilled, only to find out that none of these lots are buildable. But these lots aren't buildable, not only because they didn't do their perk test and building permits like they should have, regardless of being approved in 1970 when the standards were different. They also, the provincial government, played the Fiona card. So what's happening a lot in PEI is they're saying, well, that was before Fiona. Now that Fiona's happened, things are different. And they're also playing catch-up because of the Greenwich thing, where you've got a subdivision that was approved and had some things that the developer had to do, which he never did, and the government never checked that they were done. Now they're going and they're backtracking, because I had this message a month ago on a subdivision where they're saying, well, we approved it, but it's not really approved because we didn't follow up. Bottom line, make sure your lawyer is satisfied that you can build on the lot, not your agent. I don't want the liability, do you?
I don't want the liability either.
The lawyers can have the liability. Just make sure if you're buying land, it can be built on. And that applies to houses, too. If you're going to add a building or change the garage or whatever, make sure you get the permits to do that. Next, going in blind. It's still happening, Patty. Purchasers, agents, they just send me an offer. I didn't even know the agent existed. This offer shows up on some properties. What is this? Oh, it's an offer. No communication. Guess what happened with the three offers I received?
They got rejected, I'm
assuming. They all got rejected because they weren't even close to what the vendors were looking for. It's a commercial property, so it's a little more sophisticated. However, I'm dealing with a fine gentleman from your office that's been very communicative. There's been a lot of back and forths. The purchasers want this, the vendors want that. And we may actually come to an agreement on Monday, hopefully, keeping fingers crossed, because this agent's communicated with me. In fact, what we've actually done from the vendor's point of view, because it is a commercial property, we have a list of things that the vendors would like to see, don't have to see, but would prefer to see. Of course, everything's negotiable based on dollars and closing dates and everything else. But I'm still seeing no communication between buyer's agents, listing agents, vendors, and purchasers.
Yes, that is actually compromising. Like you said, the three rejected, the buyers may not be aware of the fact that due to their agent's style of doing business, perhaps, or their lack of communication skills, it may have cost them the property. So what your buyer's agent should be doing, which is good to know that one of the agents on my team are, because it's something that we stress, communication is key. Finding out what the seller wants. Create a give or take. The buyer wants this, the seller may want that. Let's come up with a compromise to make an attractive offer for both sides.
Exactly. Moving along. I had something bizarro happen to me this week. It's never happened to me ever before. We wrote an offer on a property. The agent sends me back a rejected offer. And then we move on. We revisit the property, figure, maybe we'll write another offer. So we write another offer, and the agent says to me, well, why are you changing the conditions on our offer? And I said, I'm not changing them. You rejected the offer. So what happened with this agent? Because they're all in such a friggin' tizzy about getting things done and signed. His vendor rejected the offer where he actually decided and wanted to or intended to accept the offer. So he signed on the wrong line. No one read the contract, sent it back to me. I just assumed we've got a rejected contract. So then we wrote another offer a few days later. And then the agent said, well, no, your offer was accepted. I said, not in writing it was, and it was rejected. They're good people. They admitted they were wrong. But this is what can happen when you're in a big, huge, panicky rush to get things done and you don't take the time to go over what you're actually signing, because it could have turned out a lot worse in this case. In this case, it turned out well, but it was kind of funny that because of the lack of communication, and I'm just as guilty as the listing agent, there should have been a text. I sent you a rejected offer. I sent you an accepted offer. right? Too many times you get stuff in email and you're just like, what is this? Oh, somebody sent me an offer 2 days ago I didn't see because they never called or texted to let you know and give you the heads up.
So you didn't, did you call him? Call this other agent?
After he was confused, yes.
Okay.
So communication is key.
That's absolutely, and it's a prime example. And I mean, sometimes even we get caught up, but prime example. That's pretty interesting, entertaining, Michael.
Well, thank you. I had more entertainment.
Hopefully you don't do that again.
So this person buys, another story, this person buys this lot. They're one of these people. I just want to buy it, no conditions. I don't care. And then after they close, now they're trying to go after the real estate agents because they're saying, well, we didn't realize the property was here. Oh, there's a video and there's an arrow. The video has no arrow in it. No arrows in her head. So she's making all these false claims, was represented very well, but was in such a rush to close on this property, she's trying to use video and pictures to say, well, the pictures show the property lines are here, or this arrow that doesn't exist that I imagine is pointing it out there. I just want to caution everybody, I'm really leery about these photographs you see on the MLS where they outline the property in Photoshop or whatever to show you where the property lines are allegedly. That is just a really, really rough approximation, and it should state that on the picture legally, but it doesn't. Do not go by those pictures. Would you agree?
I do not like, I have clients that will say to me, can you not do the property lines? I see them on other properties. And again, the liability that you are assuming, if you did not, it could have included a certain tree or a certain part and it wasn't part of the property. That is misrepresentation and false advertisement. So I am very leery of putting these lines in. I do put in disclaimers right on my pictures, though.
So do I. My disclaimers are much bigger than yours, though.
Okay. You can
see them from across the street if they're on an iPhone or even a smartwatch.
Okay.
Rental car shortages. We have oodles of rental cars at the airport just standing by waiting for eager tourists, don't we?
No, I don't think so.
What do you know?
Well, I know that when you fly into PEI, and I think you've corrected me on this months ago, but typically I'm aware of one car rental place, which is, I believe it's Enterprise. Now, that is probably about 2 or 3 kilometers away from the airport because it's downtown Charlottetown. So you have to fly into Charlottetown, make arrangements, a taxi or whatever to take
it out. What does this have to do with getting a car at the airport?
There is no cars at the airport.
There's cars at the
airport. That's why you had said that, but I have never seen cars at the airport, so please educate me.
You can rent a car at the Charlottetown Airport. Good luck finding one during tourist season. What Patty is saying is there is other car rental agencies in Charlottetown that you can go to that you can reserve a car. I don't know how you're going to get to it. Probably a taxi, which is probably another good point. Good luck finding a taxi. I mean, you'd probably be able to find one when a flight's coming in, but don't expect them to be sitting there all day long like at LaGuardia or Toronto or something like that. So if you are coming to PEI, make sure you have a rental vehicle wherever you may find that. They told my client, well, you're going to have to go fly into Moncton if you want a car, which is kind of ridiculous. But there are other rental agencies other than the ones found at the airport, just no different than going into Toronto.
Yeah, so part of booking your flight.
End of this subject.
Part of booking your
moved along.
Part of booking your flight, if you're going to delay booking your hotel room or anything like that, which I wouldn't suggest that either, but I would be booking the car rental at the same time because it's not just PEI. It is across Canada. I find even when I fly into Pearson,
the subject's over.
I have to make sure that I reserve my car rental. So book it at the same time.
If I'm buying a property and I want the lawnmower and I want a microwave oven and a television set, is it a good idea for me to take pictures of those items, including the serial numbers? The lawnmower, I probably want to record how many hours are on it if it's a commercial mower. Would it be a good idea to include that with the purchase and sale agreement?
Yes, and for a few reasons.
Give me the top 50.
So I will give you one, and then you can share one. One of the reasons I suggest to take pictures of items that you're requesting to be included, which are things like appliances, or if there's any content, is if you just put in fridge, well, the seller could technically swap out that fridge because you didn't say the fridge within the listing pictures or the fridge as per the day the Kenmore when you viewed it. So a seller's lawyer who is savvy, which Michael has no shortage of them in his back pocket, would be able to say, you just wrote down fridge and there is a fridge in this in the home that is working. So that is one big reason why I would recommend and suggest take pictures of the appliances. And maybe you could even mention it. Now, I don't get usually this picky because goodwill, most are pretty honest and put in whatever's left in the house. That's what's included. But I have over the years had these items swapped.
I had a situation where we included the lawnmower. The contract said it included the lawnmower because we're operating on a basis of assuming the vendors are honest, which in most cases they are. So the lawnmower we were asking for was orange, and it was worth about 20 grand or more. When we got there to close the deal, the lawnmower had changed to green. It was worth about $1,500.
Oh.
So the vendor's lawyer argued that the description wasn't descriptive enough, and there was a lawnmower there, and since we didn't have pictures, serial number, make, model, and all that sort of stuff on the purchase and sale, too bad for you. So the purchasers had to decide whether they're buying a house or a lawnmower, and they ended up moving ahead, regardless of the vendor's dishonesty, and admitting that he played what we refer to in real estate as the switcheroo.
Okay.
Next, I had another client looking to list a waterfront property that was very unique and expensive. And to say the least, there's really not too much comparable on the island. So she says to me, well, what do you think it's worth? And I said to her, why don't you hire an appraiser or two or three appraisers? So then she turned to me and said, well, isn't that what you're supposed to do? Aren't you guys supposed to price properties? And I said, yes. But the problem you're going to run into is there's nothing comparable. So how do you price something where there's no comparables? We eventually did come up with a reasonable number based on my experience. And she hired an appraiser and got all kinds of other opinions. Now she's in analysis paralysis. She can't figure out what it's worth down to the nickel. Should I, as a seller of real estate anywhere on earth, expect the agent and or appraiser to tell me what something's worth to the nickel, or is this more speculative based on a data set of sales data?
Yeah, the second. As a realtor, real estate professional, we give ranges. We don't typically give prices, and that is subject to change based on the time of year and what the market is doing.
Would it have anything to do with how long I want to sell and my motivation?
Like, well, that's another.
Like if I tell you, I don't care if it ever sells. 2 years, 5 years, 20 years, I don't care. So now I have the luxury of time, and I'm hoping at one point the market will move up to whatever number I've manufactured in my mind. But if I'm elderly and I vacated that house and I'm living in an old age home that's 5 miles away and the insurance company is telling me I have to check on this house every day, according to the policy, my motivation is going to be a lot different in my 80s because I probably don't need that extra 10 grand. Hypothetically, I might be able to squeeze out of that property, which is another thing I find listing agents don't do a lot of times is they ask the vendor, is there any motivation? What's your goals? What's your dreams? Do you want to sell quickly? Is money more important or is a quick closing more important? Right?
Yes, you have to understand what is the motivation, what is the expectation from the seller. It's not a time when you're working with the realtor, as long as you this is the realtor you're going to be moving forward with. This isn't a game of poker where you're going to try to hide your hand. We need to know, in order to effectively price the property, what your motivation is so that we can align that price range with those with that motivation, those expectations.
the bottom line is it's hard to put a value on a property that is an outlier or different, where there's no sales that have happened but are similar. And the other thing we need to know is the motivation of the seller. How quickly do they want to sell? Is money more important? Are they unmotivated? There's a lot of questions you can ask that seller that will help us go through the process of trying to put together some parallels on other properties that are sold that may be similar. IRAC, what a great system. Island Regulatory Appeals Commission, every real estate agent's favorite organization. So what they did originally is, because they govern land ownership, is IRAC would tell you as a buyer, or if you're a PEI corporation for that matter, you can't buy anything that's over 165 feet of water frontage or 5 acres of property. As an individual, they allowed a multiplication factor. So they would say, husband and wife, now you can buy 320 feet of waterfront or 10 acres. And it goes on and on and on. I've seen some properties with 8, 9, and 10 people on the deed just to avoid IRAC. The bottom line is you can buy property in PEI as a non-islander. And that's the rumor that's going around with people. They come here and then people will say, oh, you can't buy in PEI. You can buy in PEI. You do have to go through IRAC. But what's changed recently is the fact that you can no longer use the multiplication factor. So just because you're husband and wife, now you don't have the license to buy 320 and 10 acres. Anything to add?
Yeah, but they do say you could per household. So if it's two separate families, then each household. I know they... So before, and like you had said, a husband could be qualified for amount and a wife could, but now it's per household or per family. But if there are multiple, as in this is a separate household, there are questions that I would advise a buyer interested perhaps to ask, but not if you're under the same roof or you're considered to be part of the same family. But yes, I was one of those agents that wrote a contract a few years ago when this was still allowed, where we had about 8 names on, so that because that was the rule. It was a multiple factor. Each person was entitled to 5 acres and 165 feet. And that's how many names it took to not have to go through IRAC.
Have you heard of the gifting rule that was used back then?
No, what's the gifting rule?
Oh, good question. So what they would do is a person wanted to buy a property, so then they put their whole family on the deed, and then after the deal was closed and it didn't have to go through IRAC, these family members would deed back in the form of a gift to the original principal or the original buyer. So now you've only got one name on the deed as a result of gifting their portion of the property back.
Oh, we don't do that stuff.
So that was going on too. Yeah. That's why some of these rules may have been changed. And as always, the people at Island Regulatory Appeals Commission are very helpful. And the website's actually pretty good as well. And one other little tidbit, and then I think Patty had a question, is if you want to find out if a property can't be developed or it's identified for non-development, as we call it and have covered in previous podcasts, they do have the LPA Lands Protection Act database. You can type in the PID number, property ID number, and it will tell you not only if it's identified, but the past history of that property. We won't get into that too much detail on this episode. Got a question?
No, I was going to say something, but I got so involved in what you were saying that it has...
It's riveting, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Did you have any other funny stories or anything you wanted to cover before we shut this down?
No, I think we...
Nothing happened.
Oh, I did.
Nothing.
This is what I wanted to say. As it pertains to IRAC, you want to do things by the book. The fines are very hefty. Do not think you can circumvent or find a loophole or get around the system. IRAC is, they will investigate. They will find out. You do things. I just advocate to my clients. You speak to your lawyer. your lawyer knows, because they could be disbarred as well if they did anything to try to circumvent IRAC. So there is no circumventing it. There are no loopholes. It is black and white. The rules are laid out. I just wanted to make that clear.
And where that applies is there were people and are people, to the best of my knowledge, you've probably heard about this, where they buy the property on somebody's behalf and put it under their name, but it's really somebody else's property. Have you heard about that before?
Oh, yes, I know.
Now, if you're doing this, you're an idiot. Because what do you think the first thing they're going to do? If I was investigating this and Patty just happens to have 212 properties under her name, I would simply ask, where did the money come from, Patty? You just bought a property for $1.5 million. Where did the funds come from? Is it a good, have you had a good week in real estate?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
They're going to follow the money.
Absolutely.
I mean, I shouldn't say they're going to follow the money. I should say they should follow the money, because this has been done and is being done on the island with certain people that are holding properties for other people that shouldn't. Because the other thing these, what do you refer to, idiots haven't thought about is capital gains, because now you own a property. So what happens when it sells, or what happens when you take that property and now you have ownership over it? You've sort of been gifted the property in the eyes of Canadian Revenue Agency. Like, it plays into a lot of other stuff that I'm sure they haven't considered, because all they're thinking about is getting a deal done.
Correct.
And becoming someone's best friend.
Yeah. Not
any other funny stories or anything you want to add?
No.
Just one funny story. There must have been something that happened in the last year.
In the last year. I think we're good.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you being here. I appreciate everybody listening to us banter, as the YouTube comments have said. And if you like this content, I suggest you look for other podcasts. There's some much better, more entertaining stuff out there, isn't there?
If you're looking for information on real estate and want to protect yourself, this is the place to become informed.
And make sure you give us a star rating, give us some wonderful feedback. And if you have any ideas for future podcasts, or you have any questions about PEI real estate or just PEI in general, just email or text Patty or I. Our contact information is in the main description thingy, podcast, whatever.
Yes, the details.
You realize we don't have a clue what we're doing with this podcast. Thanks for listening. I was going to say watching again.
Yeah.
Everybody have a great day.
Have a great day, everyone.